The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. How the Rebels Lost. The Russian Revolution initiated changes unheard of, even in the most advanced capitalist countries. It granted freedom to the oppressed nationalities, established workers' control in the factories, and distributed land to the peasantry. It established the right of immediate recall for all elected officials. It legalized divorce and decriminalized homosexuality. It initiated mass literacy campaigns and began producing cheap editions of great Russian literature. It opened up free nurseries for children and communal kitchens and laundries in order to free women from the drudgery of housework. Lenin and the other revolutionaries reiterated over and over again that the success of all these changes depended on the initiative of ordinary workers struggling to reorganize society. Sadly, these first seeds of socialist construction, through no fault of the revolutionaries themselves, failed to flower into a new society. The Russian Marxists were clear that economic conditions were ripe for socialism on a world scale, but an isolated Russia could not possibly survive as a worker state. "We've always staked our play," wrote Lenin, "upon an international revolution. In one country, it is impossible to accomplish such a work as a socialist revolution." The Russian Revolution could not succeed, ultimately, unless it spread. Without the direct governmental support of the European proletariat, Trotsky had written in 1906, the working class of Russia will not be able to maintain itself in power. This internationalism was as much a practical as a moral imperative. In isolation, Russia did not possess the material or cultural basis for building a socialist society. 80% of the population still lived off the land, and the average income per head in 1913 was, according to one calculation, somewhat below what it was for people in 1688 in England. Socialism must be based upon material abundance. This is, Marx and Engels wrote, an absolute practical premise of communism, because without it, privation, want is merely made general, and with want, the struggle for necessities would begin again, and all the old filthy business would necessarily be restored. Engels warned what might happen if the leader of an extreme party were compelled to take over a government in an epoch when the movement is not yet ripe for the domination of the class which he represents. That leader, he argued, would be, quote, compelled to represent not his party nor his class, but the class from conditions are ripe for domination. What he can do contradicts all his previous actions and principles in the immediate interests of his party, and what he ought to do cannot be done. End quote. A revolutionary wave swept Europe in the wake of the Russian Revolution. But nowhere were workers' parties able to take power. The Russian Revolution was forced to fight a tough civil war without the support of any other revolutionary governments. In isolation, the revolutionary leaders of the new workers' government were compelled to behave in contradiction to their principles. Temporary measures of coercion necessitated by the extraordinary conditions of civil war became permanent. Leaders made a virtue of necessity, mistaking war communism and enforced equality born of extreme scarcity for the real thing. Trotsky and other Russian revolutionaries had expected defeat, if it came, through the physical destruction of the worker state by counter-revolutionary armies. But the Bolsheviks triumphed in the Civil War. The revolution degenerated from within rather than from being overthrown. The failure of the German Revolution of 1918 to 23 sealed the revolution's doom. Instead, the revolution besieged, blockaded, and starved, degenerated from within. In 1918, Germany occupied the Ukraine, Russia's breadbasket. With arms and money from Western powers, the former generals of the Russian army formed counter-revolutionary white armies to attack the new regime. They were aided by the initial leniency of the worker state, which let former Tsarist officers out of detention, on the written promise that they would not take up arms against the revolution. Japanese and U.S. troops also invaded, and Czech troops along the Trans-Siberian Railway also rose up in arms against the Soviet government. There were also military interventions by Britain, France, Italy, Romania, Serbia, Poland, and Canada. The results of the Civil War and blockade were catastrophic. If socialism is workers' control of production, by 1919 in Russia there were neither workers nor production. The most militant workers left the factories to fight at the front against the white armies or to join the new government. Fuel became scarce, and railroad transportation, the country's lifeblood, was reduced to a shadow of its pre-war capacity. What meager resources there were went towards fighting the war. By the end of 1920, factory production had declined to 12.9% of its 1913 level, iron ore to 1.6%. There was a mass exodus of workers from the towns to the country in search of food. The number of industrial workers in 1921 to 22 was less than half of what it was in 1917. In 3 years, Petrograd lost 57.5% of its population, and Moscow 44.5%. The working class, the social base of Soviet power, ceased in any meaningful sense to exist as a class. To make matters worse, the Bolsheviks were forced to requisition grain from the countryside in order to feed the troops and the towns because they had no trade for it. This drove a wedge between the Soviet government and the peasantry. The worker-peasant alliance continued to hold together precariously during the Civil War, but when it ended, the peasantry turned against the Bolsheviks. The revolution was like a furious wooden train, tearing off pieces of itself to feed the engine, consuming itself in an effort to keep moving. Faced with these conditions, as Duncan Hallis wrote, the Bolshevik Party came to substitute itself for a decimated, exhausted working class that was itself a small fraction of the population. Increasingly, as Soviet democracy atrophied, democratic control from below was replaced by control of the party, and society by an apparatus of functionaries that drew heavily on the engineers, technicians, and bureaucrats of the old Tsarist state. Lenin was forced to admit in 1922 that a thin veneer of Bolsheviks stood at the head of a vast layer of old Tsarist administrators. The party was forced to see itself as the trustee of workers' power, until such time as the international working class aided Russia in reviving its industry and re-establishing direct workers' rule again. But as that possibility faded, the bureaucracy began to settle in as a new ruling caste with its own interests. It was on this foundation that the bureaucracy, led by Joseph Stalin, grew in importance. Stalin was at that time the party's general secretary, a post that in previous times wasn't powerful, but became more so as Soviet democracy withered and a centralized authority grew in order to prosecute the Civil War. In his analysis of the revolution's degeneration, Trotsky explained that, quote, "The revolution got no direct help from the West. Instead of expected prosperity of the country, an ominous destitution reigned. Moreover, the outstanding representatives of the working class either died in the Civil War, or rose a few steps higher and broke away from the masses. And thus, after an unexampled tension of forces, hopes, and illusions, there came a long period of weariness, decline, and sheer disappointment in the results of the revolution. The ebb of the plebeian pride made room for a flood of pusillanimity and careerism. The new commanding caste rose to its place upon this wave." End quote. In the 12 years following Lenin's death in 1924, Stalin, the personification of the new party bureaucrat, pushed through a complete counter-revolution, obliterating all traces of 1917. The Soviets ceased to be organs of democratic control and became rubber stamps. Bureaucratic managers ran factories, not workers' committees, and workers were deprived of legal rights. Stalin promoted anti-Marxist ideas under the guise of Marxism. His theory of socialism in one country justified the new bureaucratic caste that ruled society. He physically liquidated the leaders of the revolution. According to his successor, Nikita Khrushchev, Stalin was responsible for the murders of 70% of the members and candidates of the party's Central Committee elected in 1934, 80% of whom had joined the party before 1921. Trotsky was exiled and later murdered by a Stalinist agent in Mexico in 1940. Returning to Engels' warning at the beginning of this section, the Bolshevik leadership was compelled to represent not their party nor their class, but the class for whom the conditions are ripe for domination. That class was the bourgeoisie, the capitalists. But in Russia, the revolution had economically destroyed the capitalist class. The bureaucrats became a kind of collective capitalist. If the Bolshevik Party was forced to substitute itself for the working class, the bureaucracy in turn substituted itself for the non-existent capitalist class. What worried Stalin most was Russia's international position. How could Russia survive without heavy industry? The turning point of Stalin's counter-revolution came in 1928 with the announcement of the first five-year plan, which set drastically high goals for industrial growth. The plan was accompanied by the beginning of the forced collectivization of the peasantry, aimed at squeezing maximum surplus from agricultural production. Russia's workers and peasants were dragooned into the service of breakneck industrialization, super-exploited for the sake of Russia's industrial development. Prior to this period, economic growth was accompanied by improvements in living standards. Now, wages and social spending were entirely subordinated to the siphoning of the maximum amount of surplus wealth into expanding heavy industry. Forced labor was employed on a mass scale, entire populations were uprooted, and millions died in the state terror used to carry it all through. It was as if the period of primitive accumulation, the expropriation of the peasantry, chattel slavery, and so on, prior to the takeoff of industrialization in Britain, was condensed into a period of several years instead of a few centuries. "We are 50 or 100 years behind the advanced countries," Stalin declared in 1931. "We must make good this distance in 10 years. Either we do so, or we shall go under. The real meaning of socialism was distorted beyond recognition, and used not as a guide to human liberation, but as an ideology to justify a program of accumulation on the backs of the Russian workers and peasants. Russia gave us only a brief but brilliant glimpse of workers' power. Sadly, the Stalinist bureaucracy that rose on its ruin for decades gave real socialism a bad name, one it does not deserve. Rosa Luxemburg's beautiful defense of the Russian Revolution, written in 1918, reads in retrospect as the best epitaph on the significance of the Russian Revolution. Quote, "Everything that happens in Russia is comprehensible and represents an inevitable chain of causes and effects, the starting point and end term of which are the failure of the German proletariat and the occupation of Russia by German imperialism. It would be demanding something superhuman from Lenin and his comrades if we should expect of them that under such circumstances they should conjure forth the finest democracy, the most exemplary dictatorship of the proletariat, and a flourishing socialist economy. By their determined revolutionary stand, their exemplary strength and action, and their unbreakable loyalty to international socialism, they have contributed whatever could possibly be contributed under such devilishly hard conditions." Quote continued. "Lenin and Trotsky and their friends were the first, those who went ahead as an example to the proletariat of the world. They are still the only ones up to now who can cry with Hutton, 'I have dared.' This is the essential and enduring in Bolshevik policy. In this sense, theirs is the immortal historical service of having marched ahead of the international proletariat with the conquest of political power and the practical placing of the problem of the realization of socialism, and of having advanced mightily the settlement of the score between capital and labor in the entire world. In Russia, the problem could only be posed. It could not be solved in Russia. And in this sense, the future everywhere belongs to Bolshevism." End quote and end of section.